This episode of Recovery Rocks is sponsored by SoberLink. And Lisa and I know that it's not just recovery that rocks, but waking up clear-headed rocks, remembering what you did the night before rocks, and so does establishing healthy relationships and accountability with the people that you love.
And we know that can be hard. SoberLink's remote alcohol monitoring system is designed to help you reclaim stability in your life and sustain a sober lifestyle. It's trusted by thousands of treatment professionals nationwide.
Click the link in our show notes to learn more about SoberLink and get $50 off your device. Shout out to SoberLink. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Recovery Rocks. I'm here with my BFF, Lisa. Hello, my love.
Hello, love. How are you?
How are you?
I'm good.
I'm good. I miss you. I got to see you the other day.
Yes.
Which was amazing.
It was so good.
Just wasn't enough.
I was in the city to speak at my old law firm, and I got to go hang with my POTUS and bring the tarot cards from Milan.
Yes. Yes. We're going to do a whole episode about this tarot deck that Lisa got me from Italy that I'm just obsessed with. But anyway, let's greet our fabulous friend. Here we go. Here's the bio. I'm going to read a little bit of Molly's bio. You probably follow her on Instagram.
We're going to chat.
So Molly Ruggieri. Molly was recently recognized by Axios Charlotte on its list of 25 women helping to shape Charlotte in 2023. That's pretty freaking cool. Molly is a writer, a life coach, a certified This Naked Mind coach, and founder of the Counterculture Club, a global alcohol-free community based in Charlotte, North Carolina, which challenges the mainstream belief that alcohol is a necessity for connection and a fulfilling, fun life. Yes, we completely agree with all of those things. And I would love to hear all about Counterculture Club. And I think it's very interesting that you left New York City to get sober closer to your family. And I had to leave my family in Texas to move to New York City and get sober. So let's start there.
Yeah, I think it is super interesting because it's so New York City. Also, hello. Hello, I'm Molly.
Hi.
So New York City, right? It's like, I always used to say it was the best place in the world and the worst place in the world. Like, it's the best place to go for getting sober because there are so many resources and cool people and things to do. And I didn't live in that world because I was in the drinking world. So for me, the only way to get sober was to get out of the city. But it's like, it's just as awful as it was for my drinking is just as good as it is for not drinking. So it's interesting. It can kind of, it's going to serve one extreme or another, but it's hard to be in the middle, I think, in New York.
And you did what worked for you, you know, like it shows that we all do what we have to do to take care of ourselves. And the three of us here, we all did different things, but we're still all together talking about how you don't need alcohol to have a good time. Yeah. So tell us about Counterculture Club.
Yeah. So I, like you said, I moved back to Charlotte and it was early 2018. I had been drinking the same way everybody else had been drinking. And it's like a switch went off one day and it went from social drinking for social anxiety. You know, I learned to be an adult at the same time that I learned how to drink. So I was, you know, learning how to date for the first time, live away from home, go to parties where I don't know people. And alcohol was a part of that in college. So I just continued that on in New York when I was starting my career in my 20s there. And it went, you know, I think it goes in one direction or another for people depending on their environment. And for me, I could drink even more and even later and also do other substances in New York City that I didn't have access to in the South. And like bars closed at, you know, 1 o'clock, and then in New York they close at 4. And so the access was so different and the level of what's normal was so different. So I very quickly like got into the party scene. I was also working in media and PR and magazines and stuff. So I was doing the nightlife and the, you know, the place where my boss would come in at, you know, 11 a.m. on a Monday with like sniffles from doing coke all night the night before. So it was just like a different world. And it, you know, I knew it was kind of a nagging in the back of my head that it was a problem, but it wasn't really until I went through a breakup that it went from like drinking to have fun to drinking to numb out and self-medicate and kind of using the thing that put me in that position to make me feel better. So that was when I started sort of teasing it to my family, kind of, you know, you start kind of asking for help before you're ready to ask for help. And that's what I was doing. And so my parents kind of figured it out that I wasn't doing well, you know, my job wasn't going well. I was just not taking care of myself. And so I moved back to Charlotte and got back here, and I had vowed I would never do AA, I would never do meetings. And I tried very hard to find other resources. And at the end of the day, there just really wasn't any other way to create meet community, meet other sober people aside from meetings. So at least in Charlotte at that time, I mean, this was, you know, 5 years ago. And so just even then, it was a totally different world, totally different landscape. So I ended up doing the 90 meetings in 90 days here in Charlotte. And you know, it was great for the accountability, just to see other people living this lifestyle and believing that it was possible. But at the same time, you know, it was hard to find people my own age, people that were living the lifestyle that I wanted to live. I think one of the things that is different in New York versus Charlotte is there are people of all ages and beliefs and you know, careers and things that are in the program and in the meetings there. And here it's just a little less. It was just a lot of people that were a lot older than me. And I remember my first meeting, I was like, oh, I'm so jealous of these people because they were all like in their 50s and 60s and 70s. And I'm like, they got to drink so much longer than I did. I was 27. And, you know, there was like the younger meeting, which was people that were like in their late teens, early 20s. And then there was me at 27. And then there was the older. So there was no like real group where I felt like I fit in. And I felt like I didn't see an example of like what I wanted my sobriety to look like in the rooms. And I did see a lot of hypocrisy in the other wellness spaces where I wanted to be or where I was, you know, yoga studios and, you know, I don't know, anything you can imagine, like healthy eating and influencers I followed. Everybody was kind of turning a blind eye to alcohol. And I just thought that like that was like crap. I was like, you know, okay, so the fact that I'm in this meeting, I'm not drinking anymore. Now I'm the pariah. Now I'm the one that should be stigmatized. But everybody out there that I'm friends with is doing the same thing as I was. They're just not acknowledging it. So they're fine. Mm-hmm. Like there was just a lot of like hypocrisy that I felt and I noticed in society. And, you know, I was like, I want to meet people that I can go do all these fun things with that I've been wanting to do. And I haven't been able to find them through existing communities, so I'm going to create my own. And that's sort of how Counterculture Club was started.
I'm snapping and clapping over here because it's so fucking cool. I mean, like you did and you are doing something so valuable for your community, like, and it's being recognized.
Yeah.
It was almost
like a burden, you know, not a burden, but it's almost, if you guys, I mean, you probably relate to this. It's like, oh, this is more effort than I've ever put into anything. And like, I never wanted to start a business. I never wanted, like, I was coasting, you know, like I was good at my job, but it was just a job. And like, then I felt like this, something I felt passion and purpose for. And I was like, oh, great. Now I got to go do this. Like, I have no other choice. I have to do this. And I'm an introvert. So I'm super out of my comfort zone, but I was like, I want this community and it doesn't exist. And I already did the hardest thing I could ever do in my life that I never thought I could do, which is quitting drinking. So like, what's, you know, having a coffee meeting and with a couple people and seeing what happens. So that's how it started. But yeah, sorry, Lisa, I cut you off.
Oh, no, no. I was just going to say, this is one of the things that we connected early in your journey. And I followed you all along and you always just have been so impressive to me in really not just building what you're building, but building it in a way that is really authentic to you. And you're very, you know, you put yourself out there for years about what was going on and how you were feeling. And, you know, it's not, it is, you point out the hypocrisy in the wellness spaces and all that. And for sure, it's sort of, when you set out to do this stuff, you didn't try and sugarcoat, you know, your experiences or promise. It was just very organic and very heartfelt, I thought, and genuine. And I was like, you know, I've been following you going, look at her go. I love it.
Thank you. Yeah, you too. So, I mean, like, both of you. Yeah.
I look at the like your page, and it's, you know, your Instagram page, your work is growing and it's being recognized, and you're getting press, and you're getting like more people joining your community. You're doing IRL events, you're doing virtual events, like. And it's funny you say you're an introvert, because I'm like, I'm looking at all these things you're doing and I'm like, how the hell is she an introvert? But yeah. It's like, I think it really
speaks to... But you know how it is.
Yeah, totally. I mean, like, I think I'm a pretty good mix of introvert and extrovert. When I drank, I was way more of an extrovert. And then now that I don't drink for 7.5 years, I love my alone time. I love being alone on a Friday night with a book, or even like doing laundry, listening to a podcast. Like that is that's my dream night right there.
Same.
But I still, if you look at my Instagram, I'm at parties, I'm going to events, I'm going to doing all of this stuff, but I know now that I need to recharge for a day or two after. So I share all of that because I'm curious, do you do that as well? Like, you're so out there virtually and IRL, and you're an introvert. So how are you taking care of yourself and letting yourself recharge? And, you know, yes, you've started a business about sobriety, but how are you prioritizing your sobriety first? You know, like that was something that I really struggled with, because I was more concerned with being a resource than taking care of myself. And I had to really get there on my own.
Yeah, I think that's something that's kind of been the theme of my year, honestly, because I quit my full-time job in 2021. And then that was we had our first big event in November. So I was planning that event. It was an alcohol-free happy hour. It was supposed to be held in March 2020. So, you know, two years later, we finally got to do it. Yeah.
Right.
And it was awesome. It was a huge success and it sold out. We had a line out the door. Because it was a cool event. And that's very important to me, that our events aren't just like cool sober events. They're like events that anybody would want to go to, because my target audience has kind of changed from what it was in the beginning, rather than been trying to create something for sober people. Yes, of course. But I almost feel like I'm more looking to reach the person that is where I was when I was 24, 25, that is in that kind of gray area of, you know, they're drinking more than they would like to, maybe, but they feel like they have to because they don't have a big enough quote unquote problem. And I'm like trying to, it's a lofty goal, but like change the societal narrative in general that we have, that I think is starting to happen, of like, not drinking is stigmatized. If you don't drink, you have to have a problem of this caliber to justify it, or you have to be pregnant. It's like, why don't we make not drinking just as cool and just as fun and just as interesting as drinking? So anyway, like that's what I try to make all the events. And that's what I try to make the first event. We had tarot card readings. We had really good drinks from different brands. We had Can You Forks there and like Athletic Brewing. And you know, it worked. It was a perfect blend of people that drank, people that didn't drink, people that, you know, took the night off or they were super curious, whatever. It didn't matter what was in their glass or what they chose to do about alcohol was irrelevant. It was just giving people almost like a social experiment or an opportunity to just see what happens when they try and socialize without drinking, and get that kind of feeling of empowerment that I've been lucky to experience like throughout my years of going out and not drinking and feeling a part of something. And so, you know, we've just continued to scale up. And this past January, we hosted Charlotte, Carolina's first non-alcoholic beverage festival. We sold out with over 500 people came. We filled a massive warehouse. Music. We were sponsored by Outdoor Voices. We did like yoga dance class, and Liquid Death was there. We had like 20 different brands. It was a huge, like our city just embraced it. And to answer your question, this is a long-winded way of saying I kind of burned myself out, because I just kind of was casual about it. Like I've been very organic, like you said, through this whole process. And I just felt like, okay, again, I have to do this festival because I feel like now is the time and I want to make sure that it's done in the best way possible. And I know that I can do it. And so I put everything I had into this festival, and it was planning through the holidays and doing all the pitching and all of that for sponsorships, and going and doing all the media interviews as well. And so it was mainly me. And then I had a couple part-time people helping out, but you know, I worked through the holidays and I worked through every weekend and I was up to like 2 a.m. working and I did not have time for self-care. And I completely like neglected a lot of my own needs. And then I'm coaching people during the day and it just, it became unsustainable. So after the event, I did kind of go into like an introvert shell for a little bit because I was like, I need to really scale back if I'm going to like, you know, protect myself and make sure that I'm doing those healthy things I need to do. So it's almost like this quote I always tell myself and rarely actually follow, which is like, in order to go faster, you need to slow down. I don't remember who said it, but I see it a lot. And I'm like, it's true, but it's yeah. I was just like, everyone's like, when's the next one? When's the next one? I was like, I need to sleep for 1,000 years.
Yes.
Don't say the word festival to me until like 2024, please. So, so yeah, I kind of like learned the hard way in a way of like, you have to pace yourself. And I know that, you know, it was a high stakes thing for me and for my career. And luckily it went really well, but like I got COVID like the week before and
two weeks before.
And yeah, so it was a journey. So yeah, it's a tightrope walk. Yeah. To keep it all balanced. And I think you all know better than anybody how challenging it can be, but it's a non-negotiable, the self-care things I have to do to like maintain my like not drinking and being healthy. And yeah, it's weird when it's all wrapped into your business because then you end up sacrificing it. You're not living not practicing what you're preaching.
It's so weird. Like, you know, someone like Lisa who had, like how long were you sober before you were an author of a book about sobriety?
10 years.
Yeah. Like
I was working 60 hours a week. So I would get up at like 4:35 in the morning and write. Like that's how I did it each morning. And like Molly said, I didn't really set out to write a book, right? I was trying to capture what happened for my friends and family that were like, what the fuck? And so, you know, it became something that I felt like, Molly, like I had to do, because once I started doing it, I was like, oh shit, I can do this. Like, I want to do this. I feel it's that thing. It's like sort of why I haven't written a second book. It hasn't been a thing that I'm like, I need to do this. Here's a story I need to tell. This is how I can help the next person. Right. So, and the balancing was nuts. I had no balance for a very long time. And then the book came out and I was still working 60 hours a week, but they let me do stuff remotely. And so, you know, I was traveling and working and doing the book stuff. And then it was just by 2019, I was like, I got to make a choice here. And so that's when I left law firm life and shifted gears to do this full time.
Yeah.
And quite literally moved across the country. Like you made... Yes. A huge life change, like in every way, well, you know,
that was one of those things. I mean, the move was just, I mean, like I love how Molly said, like, it was the next logical thing to do. It's what life said to do. Right. It was like, okay, now it's time I'm making a change. And we just had a circumstance come up, you know, we were looking on, you know, staying in New York. And then this place, you know, came up in California. We were like, should we do it? And it just felt in that moment,
yes,
like, yes, this is what we do, like immediately. And then we just, you know, did it. So it is like you got to listen to, and I think that's so much of what, Molly, I think you're doing and with your business, listening to your intuition and listening to your heart. And, you know, it's not always possible to follow it today because you got other obligations and you got this and that's got to be done. But but at root, you know, sometimes those things happen and you just go, yeah, I got to do this. This is the next thing for me. This is what I'm supposed to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's weird to have that kind of clarity and resolve and like trust in yourself after yes. drinking, and it shows you like when you are in
state of constantly using drugs or alcohol, which is a drug, to numb out or to get through life, you don't have contact with that intuition. So, you know, right. I do consider it like a gift.
That's true.
And exciting to have that connection.
Earlier you said something that stuck out to me. You said you're like, I quit drinking. I already did like the hardest thing in the world. So, you know, I can do anything. That is, you know, I've found that that is the number one piece of advice that sticks when I do, you know, when I'm writing, you know, in my sober dating and relationships column, when I do talks on sober dating and relationships. The biggest question I get is, you know, how do I feel confident in the bedroom? How do I go on a date without alcohol? Like, how do I, like, alcohol is so connected with sex and dating. And I remind people, look, you quit drinking. Or you got, like, or you drastically cut back on drinking. Like, what you, that you already did the hardest thing. Like, the amount of self-awareness and confidence and courage that it takes for you to stop drinking or cut back on alcohol, that is the confidence that you take on a date with you. That's the confidence that you take into the bedroom. And people don't really realize that, you know, and it like the amount of confidence that it requires for you to stand up and say, I want more for my life. I want to be healthy and happy. And I want to show up for people that I care about. Like, you really took a stand. You have to take a stand for yourself.
Yeah.
And I think that's why, that is why sobriety and sober curiosity can be so intimidating for some people, because it requires you to really just speak, like, to be that confident, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And for someone that's not a natural state, for someone that used alcohol to have confidence, it's very intuitive for me to, but you know, once I made that realization that the only way to get that authentic confidence was to not drink, like, there's mm-hmm. so many oxymorons when it comes to alcohol. And that was a big one for me. And I was like, my first date, sober after, like, I was in a relationship with someone I met in the rooms, and then I went on a first like Bumble date or something. And that was the first time I had like an urge to have a drink in like years, because it was an experience I hadn't yet done. And I had mm-hmm. always relied on alcohol for dating and relationships. But I found, and I hear that from my clients all the time too, it's the biggest thing of like, how am I going to date? How am I going to have intimacy? And I'm like, you're about to be so much better at dating. You're about to be so much more successful at finding partners, because you're not going to have to, you're not going to have to worry about, do they drink at the same level as me? Because for me, that was the biggest thing. I was like, yeah, they might be kind of a jerk, and they might, like, you know, live in a basement with no windows and on an air mattress and what have you. No, literally, I dated someone in New York that lived in.
I believe it. Yeah,
he drank the same way I did and wanted to go out till 3 a.m. and go to all the bars. And I liked him when I was drunk. So, you know, it's like you just sleepwalk through so many experiences, yes. and you don't look for the values, because you don't know what your values are at the end of the day. You're kind of, and I'm not saying this for everybody, but this is how it was for me. I didn't know what I really wanted in a partner, because I didn't know who I was. I was using alcohol as a stand-in for my personality, as sad as that sounds. Like, I dated
it's real.
Guy.
That's real.
Yeah. I dated a guy whose grandpa asked me when I was still drinking, like, what are your hobbies? Cause he was a musician. And I was so embarrassed, because I was like, I felt attacked by him just asking me, like, what do you do? And I was like, I don't know. And I felt so, like, kind of like worthless, because I had no other than,
like, I go to bars. I dance on bars. Like, that was me.
Everything was like with the drink in hand. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I bartend. I dance on bars. I have drinks served to me from bars. I go home from the bar. Like, those are all of
drink
my
more.
You know those places they serve alcohol? I go to those. That's what I do.
Go to those.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I wake up.
Establishments, as my family called them.
Yes.
What is it?
Licensed establishments.
Yes, licensed. That's a nice way to put it.
Yes.
So, okay, Molly, you're on Recovery Rocks, so we have to talk about music for a couple minutes.
Yeah.
What role did music play in your sober journey, or are there any songs you're obsessed with right now? Anything music related?
Yeah, so I actually, this is... So I've always been super passionate about music. When I was a kid, I went to Lollapalooza at 19, and I did not want to drink because I drank a lot when I was 19 in college, but I wanted to really experience all the shows mm-hmm. and all the artists. So I was very nervous though to quit drinking or to not drink and go to shows, but that was one of the first things I did. And luckily just hasn't been an issue for me since that very first show. And I'm actually going to see one of my favorite bands from when I was a kid, when I was like in my parents' car listening to the CD on the disc Walkman, I'm going to see Incubus in Wilmington,
yes,
tomorrow. So that boyfriend I met in the rooms in 2018 when I was like 2 weeks sober happens to work for Live Nation. So he's hooking me up on tickets to that show. And I'm really excited about it. But yeah, I mean, it's made music better, not drinking, for me. And I'm sure same goes for y'all too. Like, it's, you're 100% present. You remember every minute of your favorite show, and you get to like have that experience that's so much better than when you're like, you know, I went blackout to so many of my favorite artists. I don't even know if I've seen them all. Like, it's,
I know. Yeah.
Never
mind. I wish I had those shows back and could like watch them now.
That was
all the shows we went to. Yeah.
I moved for a music internship. And yeah, so I got to see all my favorite bands. I lived with a music journalist, which was super lucky. So yeah, I've always been very into music, and I'm just as into it now. Of course, it is harder to go to late shows, but you know, I can choose.
You so, know, yeah. It's funny you say that, because I go to a lot of matinee Broadway shows here. Mm-hmm. And the other day I saw Oliver, the revival of Oliver. And I was thinking, why don't we have matinee concerts? Like, this place is packed. There's clearly people who want to be entertained at 2 p.m.
Yeah.
And you know what, Molly, everyone, and I've asked that question, people are like, well, what about festivals? I'm like, I don't want to see 25 bands outside all day.
No.
I want to see one, maybe two bands at 2 p.m.
Yeah.
And then be home by like 5. Like, why? Right. Why do I have to start my night at 8 or 9? Yeah. Like, I saw Blink-182 a couple nights ago.
Oh, yeah.
They went on at 9:30, and I'm like, come on, guys. Like,
you can't do that during the week. You can't have like a matinee show if you're doing a tour and you're a band.
But they could do like
Twilight shows.
For Broadway, they do double shows on Wednesdays and then Saturday, Sundays. Or Saturday. So it could happen, Lisa. It could.
I love the idea. Nobody loves a matinee more than me.
I saw Flaming Lips the other night, and the show started at 8, and they were supposed to just play one album. I ended up leaving early, long story, but they started at 8 and there was no opener. I was like, this is awesome. Like,
that's, I love
wow,
that.
That's
like,
that's great. How,
like, that's what Elton John does too. Elton John, just, there's no opener. It's just like seven o'clock. Yeah. He hits the stage, and I'm like, thank you.
That's how the Dead were with Jerry. Yeah. Boom.
Yeah. You don't need an opening act when you're, you know, Elton John. Or I have a, Molly, I'll have to send you a picture. I have a Flaming Lips LP, a vinyl. My partner and I have a record player, and it's all B-sides, like, and it is just like, so just like back from like the 80s when they, you know, it was just, it's so out there. And I just love this record so much, but
that was one of the first shows I went to when I was getting back into going to live music, and it was the best experience. I wasn't even a huge fan of theirs, but once I went to their live show, I was like, this is insane. Like, it felt like you were on drugs.
You know, the lead singer, Wayne Coyne, people ask him in interviews all the time. They just assume he like smokes a bunch of weed and does a bunch of psychedelics. And he's like, I have, but I don't need it anymore.
No. You know, like, if you're still going at that level, you're not still there.
Yeah.
At that age. Yeah. Like, I think he's like in his 60s or so.
And he's still really hot.
Yeah. He looks like Edward Scissorhands, or like.
That must be what it is. That's my type.
Yeah. Same.
Molly, can you let our listeners know how they can find you?
Yes.
And also how they could get, any people who are interested in getting involved.
Yeah. So the cool thing about Counterculture Club is the fact that we are virtual and in person. So we just launched a new our membership is now co-ed and it's free. So we have a new community membership level that anyone anywhere in the world can join and connect to our online community. We do virtual events. We're doing a virtual book conversation with Ruby Warrington next month. So we've got a bunch of stuff coming up, and it's my way of hopefully forming what we have here in Charlotte and other cities too. So we're just now kind of launching this co-ed online community experience, and in the hopes that we can kind of find those people in other cities around the country that can kind of create what we've done here with our support. So yeah, they can join Counterculture Club by applying on our website. It's just countercultureclub.org, going to membership. We have a VIP membership as well that we'll be launching probably in the fall. And then if they want to follow me or they're interested in coaching, they can just follow me at Molly Ruggieri on Instagram. And Counterculture Club is at counterculture_club.
So amazing. And we'll have links to all of that in the show notes. Yeah. So if you're listening, you don't have to like grab a pen. We want to make this as easy for you as possible. Molly, maybe I'll talk to my publisher, see if I can get Charlotte on my book tour, see if we could do something in September.
Yes.
I will.
That would be really cool.
Manifestation circle and try and make it happen on our end.
Yes. Molly, thank you for hanging out with us today.
This is
so great hearing your story.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for all the work you do. And, you know, this is just as much for me as it is for both of you, but self-care. We have to take care of ourselves.
Self-care. Not self-indulgence.
It is not selfish. Mm-hmm. Self-care is not selfish. Yes, we all need to let ourselves recharge. So, Molly, thanks for hanging out with us.
Thank you, Molly.
Yes, listeners, hope you have a good weekend. Take care.
Take care.
Thanks for listening. We hope you like what you heard. If so, please hit subscribe and consider rating and reviewing us so others can find us. Tawny, how can our listeners find you?
You can find me at Tawny M. Lara on all of the social medias. And you can find my blog, sobrietyparty.com. Lisa, how can we find you and your amazing book?
My book is Girl Walks Out of a Bar, and it is available at bookstores everywhere and online. And you can find me at lisasmithadvisory.com. And I'm on social media at Girl Walks Out. Thanks for listening.